Blog Talk Radio. Alrighty, welcome to Global 14. The current goes down every Wednesday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central, and 5 p.m. Pacific. Host on the line with you, Onyx, and also the other host, Golden Fleece. And we are back.
Yes, yes.
Another Wednesday night. What's up?
Ah, man, another Wednesday night. Like you said, hump day, two more days till Friday, two more days to the weekend. One more day to Miami Heat versus San Antonio Spurs. Man, it's a lot of good stuff going on this week.
It's a lot of good stuff going on this week. I'm turning 29 this Friday. Shout out to everybody that's going to send me a B-Day. I know I'm getting up there.
Nah, man, that's young, man. You, that's young. That's young years. You can still run miles. 29? Sheesh. I wish I was 29, man, but that's a great milestone, man. That's not old at all.
I know. I'm truly blessed. Definitely glad to be able to see that. Yes, tonight, special guest. You guys, first time listening to It Is Global 14, the cut via Jermaine Dupri, social network, global14.com. So you guys can also head over there. Lots of interesting things going on right now. Mariah Carey just dropped her Easter album this week in the U.S., doing very well in sales. And then also we have Jagged Edge that's working on a new album. They released their new single called Hope. So lots of things cooking over at the So-So Dev Global 14 office. Shout out to Jermaine Dupri and everybody else. Last week, we had the unsigned review with the artist, the indie artist, and we did the review, A&R review. We had DJ Coalitions on the line, had some Texas All-Star DJs, Heat Center DJs and Core DJs.
Nice.
And it was some nice feedback and some great opportunities for some people. So can you let the other artists that didn't get to participate know how they can participate in the future?
Yes, so you will not miss those opportunities. Just hit us up. That's all you got to do. Hit us up. Follow us on our social networks. Onyx is Onyx254 on Twitter. I'm the Golden Fleece on Twitter. Or you can hit us up on global14.com. You could do a DM on Twitter. You could do a private message on global14.com. The reason why we like to do this is because we actually like to get to know who the artist is, what project that you're working on, what single are you trying to push. So, you know, don't just spam us with the, and we say this every week, don't just spam us with, hey, here's my link, check out my music, you know what I mean? Tell us a little bit more about yourself. We want to make sure we introduce you right, because like she just said, you never know who's going to be on the call. You got DJ Coalition members on the call. You got A&Rs that could be on the call. So if we do you that disservice by just saying, hey, here's so-and-so, check it out, you know, we not pushing you in the right light. So make sure you give us the right information so we could put you in that right light, and we'd be happy to do it. You know what I'm saying? There's a bunch of opportunities when you listen to the cut. So make sure you hit us on Twitter, global14.com. You know, even Instagram got a direct message now. So you can hit us up on the Instagram. Onyx is Onyx254. I'm the Golden Fleet. Anywhere you could do the private shit, that's what we like. You know what I mean? Don't hit us up on the walls talking about, hey, check out my new shit. Here you go, and with the link, because that might get passed up. And you can't say we didn't tell you not to do that. So
I know that's right. Say it again.
And you can't say we didn't tell you not to do that, because it happens. We say it, and then people hit us like that, and then they get upset when we don't, you know what I mean, put them on the review show. All we want to do is help you out. So if you just comply with our requests, we all good.
I know that's right. Definitely got to follow the protocol. We talked about that last week. If someone requests something specific of you in a certain way, it's nothing worse than not having that structure or that way. It just makes it difficult, makes it a lot more harder than it needs to be, especially when it's a service to you. So, you guys, tonight, super excited. We have Big Uncle Dan Johnson is on the line with us. He's actually on the line right now, by the way. Professional music veteran. I mean, started as an artist, production is, and we're going to get all into that, but definitely easily noted as industry veteran, and that's a huge thing. So many things we could say about him, but again, we're looking forward to you staying on the line. If you have comments and questions for our guest tonight, make sure you stay by the phone lines at 760-913-4119. That's going to be a great time. We opened the show with a couple of records that he has contributed to, which was the Deer okay? Classic Records, all right? Continues to be sampled over and over. He continues to collect his tech. That is the awesome thing about it. The VO2 occasions, we played Monica and Usher's Babyface, did a new rendition from the Midnight Stars original Slow Dance, and then we also played his other artists that he has that we introduced on the show tonight, Bay Fog, with You Said. We also have some more records we're going to play by his other Skip, Unsung Heroes, and we're going to do that before he comes on the line. But you guys definitely want to stay tuned in for this interview. Comes with a wealth of experience and just several decades in the business. I mean, you just can't teach experience, and the things that he's got to do and his contributions are huge. So, I'm excited. What's up?
Monster Records. Monster Records. I don't think maybe the younger generation that listens to our show, you know, you will know him still because he has produced for and helped out guys that you know of this era, but I'm talking about when the music really meant something. I'm talking about classic records that stand the test of time that people play to this day. Mm-hmm. Young people play to this day. I'm talking about, like, hands-on some real records, working with real legendary songwriters and producers. So, you know, that it's just awesome to have somebody like that on the show. I mean, I got the Dio's records. I got all the Babyface records. Mm-hmm. So sometimes I just stare at the cover and be like, yo, these dudes was dressed in some next level shit, but all of the music, when you put on that shit, you be like, oh man, this was the shit.
Yeah.
So pleasure to have him on the show tonight.
It really is. And then, you know, the records that he contributed to are definitely not ones that, you know, we even have to play back, like, oh, remember this? This is on the playlist, like, weekly. So that's what's so awesome about it. But, we're going to go ahead and we're going to skip, you know, again, Monster, that's the album, So Best, Jagged Edge, Hope Records out, but we're going to go straight into our guest. And then, by the way, you guys, Mariah Carey had an NBC special that was on TV the other night, an at-home concert. She showed a couple of videos and all that. I know Sid, he contributed to Mariah Carey's record as well, so we'll get into all of that, you guys. And,
shout out her little daughter, already singing.
Shout out to who?
Mariah Carey's little daughter, already singing.
Oh, yeah. I know. Isn't that something? Isn't that something? Hey. That was the cutest thing. Yo, that song was nice. It was definitely adorable. So we're going to play this record. This is another one of Skip's artists. You may want to pay attention because they're being mentored by one of the best in the game. So this record is called Unsung Heroes. And you know what? Let me say this. I met Sid at the DJs United conference that took place in St. Louis. So shout out to DJs United for bringing him there. And he brought his team as well and his artists. And they did a wonderful job. The things I was thinking in my head, like, ooh, they should have girls. I mean, out of nowhere, girls came dancing. And I was like, whoa, like, this is crazy. So I saw him perform this record, and it was really powerful, and everybody in the audience and at the conference was really excited about his performance. So this is one of the records that got everybody's attention. Unsung Heroes, this is by Skip, and we'll be back with Uncle Dennis Johnson on Global 14 The Time.
About when the club closed and the love's gone.
Come on.
What you gonna dance to? Can you ride to a song talking about broke people, knowing you broken up? Can you ride to a song about being in love when you got no hope in love? Here I am to the rescue, no cape, no mask, with a pen in the pad, and you ain't gotta pay me homage or cash, cause I care, I swear, it gotta be more heroes out there, and I know they say that, and they say this, and I say that to say this, I saved her life and changed tears, but somehow y'all still hate it, they say I'm too positive, and when you positive, you can't make it, please, can I make it, I'm getting stuck cause I made it.
Unsung hero, they never recognize the good you do.
I'm an unsung hero, do, but you don't. Don't appreciate that we're free. I don't see how you can walk this earth and not wanna change everything you see. You see, this ain't no diss song. I did wrong, ain't afraid to admit it, but I just won't glorify my story. I much rather prevent it because I care. I swear, it gotta be more heroes out there, and I know they.
La, 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 la.
I know they.
La, 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 la.
I know they say that and they say this, and I say that to say this. I say her life can change here, but somehow y'all still hate it. They say I'm too positive, and when you positive, you can't make it.
Heroes, and we do have a special guest on the line, as promised. Big Uncle Dams Johnson. Hey.
Hey, hey, hey. What's up, Lady Onyx? How are you doing? The Queen of Killeen. The
I
Queen of Killeen.
Shout out Killeen, Texas. Yes, we're so excited to have you on the line. Have also my other host with us tonight, Golden Fleece.
What's up, Golden Fleece? How are you doing
show,
tonight?
How are you tonight? Pleasure to have you, sir.
Are you in Texas as well?
No, I'm actually in Orlando, Florida.
Okay. Well, I used to live in San Antonio, and I've spent a lot of time in Florida, so I have some knowledge of both Texas and Florida, so it's all good.
Nice.
All right, all right. And I'm right now, I'm in, I do a lot of moving around, as you do, and we all do. I'm in North Carolina broadcasting for your show, this show tonight. But, again, we just cannot thank you enough for taking the time out. And I do want to let the guests know and the artists know that he said we are all his. So we get as much time as we want. And I'm super excited.
Sure. Absolutely. I got to give a shout-out to Kakalak. Who are you down there in
yeah.
North Carolina? One of my clients
That's
is
right.
in North Carolina, actually.
That's awesome. That is awesome. You guys, 760-913-4119. We're going to definitely get right into the interview and then pull some callers in at a later time in the interview. So we have your, I mean, I just don't even know where to begin. You have so many awards, but I will say this. We'd like to take it back to when you were a small child. I know that you first got into music from watching the Ed Sullivan Show. But prior to then, tell us kind of about your upbringing and your home environment and where you're from.
Well, let me say that prior to the Ed Sullivan Show, some of my family members tell me that I used to like Elvis Presley. Now, I don't have any recollection of that, and they said I used to imitate Elvis. And I'm like, huh, are you kidding? Are you guys having, like, some kind of senior moments or something? I don't recall that. I remember liking the Beatles. But I grew up in a house where my mom and my aunt, they liked jazz and they liked blues and they liked R&B. And they liked gospel as well. So I grew up hearing all kinds of music. I heard a lot of people that a lot of the youngins of today don't even know anything about. Like, I heard people like Brooke Benton, Dinah Washington, Bobby Blue Bland, B.B. King, Lou Rawls.
Mm-hmm.
On the gospel
mm-hmm.
side, I heard Pahlia Jackson, the Dixie Hummingbirds, the Gospel Caravans. On the jazz side, I heard Shirley Scott, Cannonball Adderley, people like that. So That's what I heard when I was growing up. Then I went to school, and I went to an experimental high school, which was a college preparatory high school, which was in Indianapolis, the first experiment of trying to have a 50-50 black and 50-50 white population for a college preparatory high school. And that's where I got introduced to a lot of the culture of hearing a lot of the rock acts out of England and what have you. So I'm just a miscegenation when it comes to music. I like all kinds of music. As a matter of fact, now that I basically deal in R&B and hip-hop, probably some of my favorite music is rock, and I certainly like jazz and blues. So don't get it twisted. I'm not a one-trick pony here.
That is awesome. It's going to be a very, very insightful night, and we're going to learn something. I'm already learning already. And so let's talk about the Ed Sullivan Experience, sitting down, watching TV, and deciding, hey, you know, I think I might just want to do this. What triggered that for you?
You know, I think that when you're young and you see the reaction of an audience like that to the Beatles being on Ed Sullivan, the way those girls were screaming and everything, and I thought, oh, man, that's the life. You know, I got to be a rock and roll star, make them scream like that. I mean, they were just literally hysterical. And I don't know, it was something about it. It really caught my attention. And it wasn't just the Beatles, but when I was a little boy, my mom took me to Chicago with her then boyfriend, and we went to the Regal Theater, which was a classic place for a lot of the soul, old school artists performed. And it was a show that had the Temptations, the Marvelettes,
wow,
Junior Walker and the All-Stars, the Vibrations, the Contours, and
wow,
a fledgling lady that played the piano, and she got a crown put on her head that night, and it was Aretha Franklin. And everybody else was pretty much a Motown artist, but she was not signed to Motown, but this was before she became the Queen of Soul. And I saw her at that period of time, you know, when she was at Columbia Records. And I kept asking my mom, I said, who's that lady playing the piano? And she said, that's Reverend Franklin's daughter. And I kept like, who is Reverend Franklin? But I just remember that this woman was awesome, the way she was playing that piano and singing. Then when we moved to Seattle, I saw her on the Dick Clark Show, and that's when she was doing Respect and all that. I said, Mom, that's that lady we saw in Chicago a few years ago. She said, yeah, that's Reverend Franklin's daughter. By then, I knew who Reverend Franklin was. But
right,
it was like the connection of like, oh, okay. So I'm a giant Aretha Franklin fan as well. So it wasn't just
yes,
the Beatles. It was like the
yes,
Motown soul. It was the Queen of Soul. I just like everything. And when I was in high school, I used to be a journalist for our school
wow,
paper. And I would be able to get press passes to all the concerts that came to town. And I would go interview all the artists at the Coliseum. So I got to know a lot of the rock stars of that era.
Yes.
And as I went on to college, I would see some of them again. And I would be on the committee to help do the concert promotions. So I was just deeply into this thing. I mean, the music bug bit me early, and it's just been a part of my life, you know, like for, as you said, decades, even though I'm still just 37, you know.
Absolutely. No,
what a fool believes he sees, as the Doobie Brothers say.
I can't believe that. I mean, it's so cool to hear you speak of this and give us these, you know, these things that we can't Google, and you had to be there to see it, and you just had to you know, be it within that time. Wow, I'm speechless.
Oh, yeah,
so
you just have no idea, you two. You just don't know what you guys have missed out on. I mean, this music business, it used to be a whole lot of real fun when music was
mm-hmm,
really music. Now it's so manufactured, like something out of a microwave oven, until
mm-hmm,
some of the fun is gone, you know. But anyway, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no, we can't wait to get more into that, because that's exactly one of the things that we have on our agenda to ask you. We want to know how you feel about today's urban music, but definitely back to you. So you got the press pass, and you're doing these interviews and meeting everybody in rock and roll and attending concerts and whatnot. So when did your opportunity come to actually begin to work with artists, and you said you started out as an artist. So let's talk about that.
Yeah, I was in a lot of bands. Some of them were soul bands, and then I started being in rock bands. Sometimes I'd be the only black guy in the band, and we played various places, and we were rocking hard, doing Led Zeppelin or Beatles, Rolling Stones, Chicago. We'd always do some Motown, some of the Stack stuff like Otis Redding and people like and Wilson Pickett. What really made things take a drastic turn for me, when I was in college, I was managed by this gentleman, no names mentioned, and there was another group called the Soul Continentals that were managed by this gentleman as well. And we did a concert at a college campus, and we got ripped off by our manager. And that gave me the first indication about the management side. And I'm like, I think I like this feeling. So I then decided from that point on that every band that I was in, I was going to be the leader, and I was going to take care of the business and make sure everything was right. So it was in the mid-70s that I went to a concert in Indianapolis from the group that was being done by the group called The Average White Band. They had this huge hit called Pick Up the Pieces. And the group that opened the show for The Average White Band was a group called Manchild. And the leader of Manchild, he had been in the Soul Continentals, and I had known him from the past. So I went up after the show was over and went backstage and spoke to him and a couple of the other guys in the band that I had known from the past. And he was like, "What are you doing now?" And I said, "Well, I had just formed a band with some people out of Danville, Illinois. But after seeing you guys perform tonight, I'm not going to be doing this anymore because you guys are so awesome. We're doing a similar style of music, or a blend of rock and funk put together. But you guys are bad, and there's no point in us even trying it. You guys are bad, you know." He said, "Well, here's my number. I want you to do me a favor and give me a call tomorrow, something I want to talk to you about." And all night long, I was puzzled as to, what does he want to talk to me about? So I gave him a call, and he said, "I asked you last night, what are you doing? And you told me you'd formed a band." I was like, "Yeah, but I'm not going to be in that band anymore, thanks to you guys. You put us out of business." And they don't even know it. I haven't even told them yet that I'm not going to be doing it anymore. He said, "Well, I have an offer for you. I want you to join our band and play Briefcase." And I said, "What is that?" He said, "Briefcase, I want you to be our manager." And I'm like, "What?" He said, "I don't know anybody that knows as much about the music business as you do, as young as you are." He said, "So I'm the leader, and I'm tired of handling business, and I need you to join us and be the manager." And he said, "I want you to come up to this nightclub where we're playing. We're playing all week. We're doing a residency at this nightclub. And come up tomorrow night and check out the band. Make sure it's something that you really want to do, and then we'll have a meeting and go from there." And I was kind of like in a trance. I was like, okay. Now, I went to the place, and they performed. They were good. As you all say nowadays, they turned it up. They turn up.
Yes.
They turned it up, and they turned it out. They went downstairs and had a meeting while I was sitting upstairs. They came upstairs. "You're our manager now." Like, okay. So that was in October of 1975. And ever since that point in time, I can say that things took a turn towards the serious professional side of the music business. Manchild went on to become the biggest self-contained black band that ever came from Indianapolis, and included in its membership was this gentleman by the name of Kenny Edmonds, who would later become Babyface.
That's right. Awesome. That is awesome. And so then, so you're managing these artists and you're managing Babyface. I saw some of the transitions, and of course, After Seven and Kevin Edmonds and just all of them.
Well, there's a history with that. Kevin Edmonds,
yes,
and
ask
his brother Melvin, and the other gentleman in After Seven, Keith Mitchell. Well, Keith and Kevin were college students at Indiana University, and they were in a group called Hush, and they used to sing with the IU Soul Review before they ever became After Seven. And Kevin got his start really big in the music business when he became Manchild's road manager. He was my assistant. It's just a lot of history. And the way in which I met Kenny Edmonds or any of the Edmonds brothers is their older brother, Melvin, who sang in After Seven. He and I used to be in a band together. So it's pretty wild.
Wow.
The history and the connections are amazing.
Yes, it is. It is. And just, it's amazing to get, the, again, the inside, the what we can't Google, and just the stories and to hear about the relationships that you made and how you made them. It's just awesome. So let's
well,
talk
back,
about
back to the Manchild story a little bit. Manchild had a pretty big following locally with the black club scene. And my spirit and mind was always sort of a rock sense. I always wanted to attract mainstream America into liking something. So I took them, if you want to say it like this, kind of out of the hood, if you will, and made them known to mainstream Indianapolis. And it ended up being where we went around the country and we played on shows with people like Bootsy and Cameo and Eddie Kendricks and so forth and so on. And we got a mayor's proclamation for Manchild Day and got the key to the city and on TV, and they were in Billboard, and we charted. And I mean, I just did all of those kind of things, PR-related, shaking the right hands, making the right moves, because that even transfers into how I deal with things today. You can only go so far with being the king of your block or the queen of your hood. You know, the hood doesn't spend dollars. They want everything on the come up. So in order for you to try to have an opportunity to win, you must get into the pocketbooks of people that have disposable income. So towards that advent, I had to make Manchild become known by mainstream Indianapolis and ultimately as many pockets of America as I could. And we got a major label record deal. They had two albums, and they made a little bit of noise, and this was the 70s. So that's kind of the story on Manchild, and obviously we know that Kenny ultimately became Babyface, and also included in Manchild was Daryl Simmons, who has written a lot of tunes with Kenny, and he's done production on Monica and Drew Hill and Aretha Franklin, and he's gotten gold and platinum records and Grammys on his own. Also in Manchild was Reggie Griffin, who is the guy famous for doing the Chaka Khan on her I Feel For You song. And he had some records out under doing techno rock, techno funk. Murder Rock was a big hit that he had, and he did stuff with the Sugar Hill Gang, and he played with Phyllis Hyman and Mick Jagger and the Isley Brothers. Oh, my God. You know, the list just goes on and on.
That's amazing. I'm over here super intrigued. It's just incredible, really exciting. We want to talk. I want to introduce the listeners and our audience and our generation as well to which they should have already known. But these records, again, you know, we opened the show with these two very well-populated records that continue to be sampled and remixed. And can we talk about kind of how that process came about and the ideas, the energy in the studio or the office or the home? For any of the records that you wrote?
Slow Jam is probably one of the most interesting stories that you could ever want to hear. When Kenny left Manchild, I became his manager in his solo career, and he formed a group called April, because he was born in April. Kenny, for those people out there that don't know whatever rock you've been under all these years, Kenny is Babyface, by the way. And we were trying to write material because we were getting ready to cut a demo. And at one point, we had a lot of fast tunes for the group April. And he kind of said to me one day, he said, we need some ballads. We need something with some really good concepts for some ballads, because we've got a lot of fast tunes, you know, but we need some ballads. And it's like, I just listened. I was like, okay. So I used to coach baseball. And I went to a high school baseball game because one of my cousins played on the high school team, and I was his coach during summer league, and I was scouting some of the players. And I gave the guys a ride home, and I was just trying to find a way to get some concepts out of the young people that were like seniors in high school. You know, what do you all like when you go to a party? They were like saying, yeah, we like for whoever's playing the music at the party to play a nice blend, you know, a nice assortment of fast tunes and slow jams. And I said, and play what? And they said, slow jam. I said, that's it. Slow jam. Slow jam. So I dropped them off and I drove to the band house. I know I was speeding. I should have gotten a ticket. Went to the band house and dipped to Kenny and got in his face and I said, slow jam. That's it. And he looked at me like I was crazy. He said, yeah, that's what we need. I said, no, that's it. It's slow jam. He said, yeah, Sid, that's what we need. We need a slow jam. I said, that's the name of the song, Slow Jam. He said, Sid, we need a... I said, Kenny, the song is Slow Jam. Boy meets girl at dance, fall in love, and they dance and fall in love on a slow jam. He's like, oh, man. He immediately went and grabbed his guitar and started strumming out chords, and we started working on lyrics and melodies. He called the keyboard player in and the bass player and the drummer, and in one long night session, we created Slow Jam.
Amazing. Absolutely
now,
amazing.
His group did Slow Jam. They played on a concert with Midnight Star as an opening act, and they did Slow Jam. And Midnight Star was floored by the tune and the audience reaction to the tune. So to make a long story short, the group April ended up breaking up. Midnight Star had remembered Slow Jam, and arrangements were made for them to do a version of Slow Jam, and it ended up going on their triple platinum No Parking on the Dance Floor album. And it's been voted in many polls as one of the greatest slow songs of all time, because it is a slow jam.
It is, and I told you, you know, it was crazy. Tyrone was like, hey, you got to meet Sid. You know, he wrote two occasions. I said, what? He wrote what? He's like, yeah. And then just the resume, and I was like, oh, my God, they did slow jams, too. I was just used to the scene. It was like a kid in a candy store. I was just super excited. And this is several years later. How does it feel to know that you made one of these type of records, one of these classic records that people are playing at weddings and proms and, you know, just really making a part of it? You know, their lives.
Well, I've had people come up to me and say things like, you know, you're responsible for me being in child support court. And I'm like,
what?
I'm like, what?
Okay.
Okay. You know, you had something to do with two songs that have gotten me in trouble. I said, okay. So I didn't know whether to take that as a compliment or an insult, but nevertheless, it has its pros and it has its cons, but certainly more pros because in particular, well, with I'm going to answer your two occasions question in a moment that I've got to piggyback off of Slow Jam. With Slow Jam, what really made that great was the fact that Kenny produced a new version on the tune by Usher Raymond and Monica Arnold that was featured on the soundtrack to the movie Soul Food, and it also played in the movie, and it was also on Usher's My Way album, which sold gazillion copies, and it also played in the TV series. So whenever you have a tune like that that gets that much action, as they say nowadays in the streets, getting that check.
So, right.
That's a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful thing. Now, with two occasions and that check, you had Next use a part of it in their tune, I Still Love You. You've had Plies featuring Ashanti do it in Want It, Need It. You had The Game use it in One Night. And you had Mimi, also known as Mariah Carey, do it in We Belong Together. Oh, I love me some Mimi, let me tell you. Because she did that song. Oh, man. I can only say, oh, man. It's the kind of stuff that makes you be able to keep eating during the lean times, if you know what I'm saying. It's really, really a great thing that people want to take a piece of something that you've been a part of and keep the legacy of the song going, because it stands alone on its own as well. It and Slow Jam both still get major spins on all forms of radio because they're just two of the best ballads of all time. So I'm definitely honored to be a part of those, no ifs, ands, and buts about it.
That's right. Absolutely. And we're just honored to have you on the line as well and share these moments with us and these experiences. And it's just super, super cool. So how about...
So it gets you your perks when you get to go to an award ceremony.
Oh,
and
yeah.
You get to meet people like Mariah Carey and Rihanna and Sierra and so forth and so on. I remember when I was in New York at the awards, and they were calling us all up on stage, and I had not ever met Mariah before. And so mm-hmm. I was walking up to introduce myself to her, and she was leaning in to give me a kiss. And she said, "I already know who you are."
Thank you. Oh, awesome.
And I said, "Well, thank you so very much." She said, "No, sweetie, thank you." And I said, "Okay, here we go."
Yes.
Nick Cannon, eat your heart out. I got a kiss from your wife before you did.
That is hilarious and just awesome. I can't imagine the excitement for yourself. And how about your family? How about that?
My family?
How did they receive? Yes, how did they receive all of
you? Well, my family thinks I'm crazy because I went to college to major in psychology to become a psychiatrist or a psychologist. And they hate the fact that the music bug bit me because I was, you know, National Honor Society and was tested mm-hmm. to have a super genius IQ and all that crazy academic intellectual stuff, you know. I mean, I still have all that, but I just like music, man. I'm sorry. I cannot help it. So they like it, especially when they get comp tickets or get free product. But,
yes.
You know, it's not your traditional sort of job, if you will. But I think quietly, you know, when they see pictures at award ceremony or me with other entertainers, I mean, they're like, "Oh, yeah, that's my cousin or my nephew or whatever, yeah." You know, so I think they like it. And they especially like the fact that I'm evolving and I've made some changes.
Yes.
That I used to deal with rap of a certain type, and I didn't deal with it because that was what I liked. It was just business.
Mm-hmm.
But in part mm-hmm. of being a teacher, you have to practice what you preach. And
mm-hmm.
I no longer will be affiliated with rap that I call offensive rap. So I've told
mm-hmm.
all of my clients that if your current single that we'd already done before I came to this position has any explicit words in it, this will be
mm-hmm.
your last as long as you're with me, Cap.
Mm-hmm.
Now, most of them, I banned the N-word and the B-word in January of 2013, but now
mm-hmm.
everything's got to be totally clean from hereafter. There's no profanity at all because there's really
mm-hmm.
not any point in it. It's like you catch
mm-hmm.
more flies with honey than you do with vinegar, and there are just certain markets
mm-hmm.
that won't deal with explicit music. And 67%
mm-hmm.
of black music is sold outside of the United States. And across the seas, they don't get into the ratchet, chicken head, hood rat type music. So
right. You're
making an epic fail if you're making that kind of music because it's going to have a very, very, very limited ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
Internet radio is starting to really, or technically it's called streaming, you know, it's having a big impact now because terrestrial radio has so many political games with Radio 1
right.
and Clear Channel, and
right.
a lot of places of business are pumping internet radio in. A lot of hotel rooms are coming in with the Wi-Fi already there and the channels that you can tune in. So in the day parts, it's got to be cleaned up because you cannot
mm-hmm.
be in the Hyatt Regency or the W and hear that ratchet type of rap if they're going to be
mm-hmm.
pumping that into their place in the lobby, you know. So I'm saying
mm-hmm.
to people, if you want to have an opportunity to broaden your horizon and have a shot at this thing that reaches lots of people all over the world, you got to upgrade. You got to change
mm-hmm.
your flow, because if you're really an MC and you can really spit lyrics, then it should be very easy for you to find clever wordplay without having to use profanity. That's just where I am on the thing.
Awesome. And so I'm so glad that you transitioned to that, because I wanted to ask you about the Field Mob ordeal and then bring our other host on as well so he can
you would
speak with you.
There, wouldn't you?
I don't know any full story, the scoop, but I know that you played a part in their career and landed their deal, I believe. So I wanted to kind of ask you about that. And
was at a period of time in my life where R&B just seemed like it was beyond being on a ventilator. R&B was dead. And the only thing that was really happening was what people call either hip-hop or rap. And I was introduced to some people in the South who had recommended me to work with these people that had these Southern-based acts. So I went down to the backwoods of Georgia and encountered these people, and I thought I was having an out-of-body experience. Now, I like the South.
Yes.
Don't get me wrong, because my maternal side of the family, well, my father was from Kentucky and my mother's from Tennessee. As a matter of fact, my mother is from the city where the Ku Klux Klan was originated. And as a little boy, I used to go down to Pulaski, Tennessee all the time. So I'm not knowing about the South. Don't want anybody to misunderstand that. And I love Southern cooking, the biscuits and the gravy and the whole nine yards. I love the South. As a matter of fact, there have been many times that I've thought about relocating to the South and stop being this northern boy. But there's a difference to me in going to the South and going to the backwoods of the South, because there's something about the culture of the people that are in some of the out-of-the-way places that they seem just a little bit off the beaten path. But it was fun, and they'd never been on airplanes, and a lot of things were just very, very new to them. And I would have to say the two members of the Field Mob were two of the most colorful and the most talented MCs that I have ever heard in my life. Their ability for wordplay and the colorful stories they could tell when they were doing their rhymes. Trust me when I tell you, I am a fan of their artistry. I may not be a fan of all of the explicit language and some of that, but in music, it's kind of like in business, period. You have to be able to find a way to separate personal from business. And I'm able to do that. I'm able to give props and play to the artistry. Now, when it comes to the people, next question.
Right. Right. Well,
you did ask me something else that I should probably address. Yeah, and part of my responsibility, this is a good story. I was tracked down by a vice president of Universal Music Group. I still to this day don't know how he got my cell phone number. But my mom was ill, and I had gone home to visit her and do some errands for her. And then I was out on a personal run to another city, and this man tracked me down and said, "You're Sid Johnson, and you have something to do with the Field Mob?" I'm like, "And you are?" And he identified himself. He said, "I need a package overnighted to me because we heard this record, and I really believe in my heart that we want to sign them up immediately and get working." I'm like, is this a joke? I'm thinking this has to be a prank phone call. I immediately hightailed myself back to office setting, put the package together. I mean, I made it just under the radar to get this FedEx package. And they gave me their FedEx account number and everything. That probably in history would be one of the quickest major label record deals that ever went down, because of the time and the speed that we put that together. It was really amazing. And it was fun initially. It was like great. I mean, they had some classic material on their first two albums. But you know how artists can be. Sometimes things can go to artists' heads. Sometimes people are just not quite ready in the game. But, man, I still listen to the Field Mob albums. They are still one of my favorite rap acts. Oh, my God, they're so clever. I did get to meet the pig in the Stick of Being Lonely video, though.
It's so crazy because we actually had the girl, Sakara, I believe, who called into our show a couple months back when we had a guest. And we were like, wow, she sung Sick of Being Lonely, the hook. So, they definitely had a great album, and I remember it in school, and we really enjoyed it, especially at a time, you know, DTP, and we just were really excited about it. It was very backwards Southern, so I totally get your analogy there. And I want to bring our other host on the line, too, but I have this question for you. How is it seeing the transition, like you said, of the industry becoming what used to be fun into now being what it is today? Does it get discouraging at times for you?
There was a period
of new artist
where I totally had stayed behind the scenes. I didn't want to actively be out there. I'm not a drinker. I don't drink, and I've never ever. I've not even smoked a blunt. Never had a tobacco product. I am a different kind of L7 guy. I'm L7 mm-hmm. with a twist. So I didn't want to deal with artists any longer, and I was invited mm-hmm. to go to a seminar and speak. And every artist at the seminar ganged around me after I came off the stage, and they all wanted me to help them. And I'm like, do you all not get it that I don't want to do this with you all anymore? Because you all are crazy. You all don't get
right.
it. You don't want to listen. You think you know it all,
right.
and you don't know anything. That's what I'm saying under my breath.
Right.
Well, one of those people that cornered me was Zay Foggs. So he and the president, he and his talent, but the president of the DJs United Coalition, Lucky Smith, who's a very dear friend of mine and good buddy, great brother, he and a concert promoter DJ named Gino Shelton, they invited me to be on the panel. So I hold them responsible for bringing me back into this mayhem. And I don't know whether
yes.
to shake their hand or take a baseball bat and beat them. But nevertheless, what I've seen happen is there's been a denigrade of Black music. And what better time than this being Black Music Month than to speak about this? The legacy of some of those artists that I mentioned when I was a little boy, the legacy of what once was is lost now, because a lot of our youngins, it starts with them, with Lil Wayne and Drake and what have you,
yeah.
and moving forward, and they don't go backwards. And in order to know where you're going, you have to know where you've been. And you must do your research and know your history. How are you going to possibly tell me you're a rapper and you did not study Kool Moe Dee or LL Cool J or
mm-hmm.
A Tribe Called Quest or Run DMC mm-hmm. or any of that? If you thought that rap started with Lil Wayne, you're sadly tragic. If you thought it,
mm-hmm.
if you thought that R&B singing started with R. Kelly, then you're sadly tragic. Because
mm-hmm.
someone like R. Kelly, at least he had the good sense to know that he got his main influence from Sam Cooke.
Mm-hmm.
When I first
mm-hmm.
met Zay Foggs, he didn't even know who Sam Cooke was. But Zay had mm-hmm. been raised in a gospel environment because his father and grandfather
mm-hmm.
were ministers. So
mm-hmm.
a lot of the secular artists he hadn't been totally exposed to. But you best
mm-hmm.
to believe that I sent him a lot of YouTube links of Sam Cooke. I said,
that's
go
right.
and baptize yourself in some of these great R&B people like Howard Hewitt and so forth and so on. So what is happening right now, the missing link for me, is that the youngins do not know the history, and they don't take the time to study their craft. So what you have is you have like fast food assemblies of what they call music today. One of the biggest misnomers that they call the track, they call it a beat. And the beat is just the
mm-hmm.
drums. And they'll say, well, my boy, he's a beat maker. And I said, oh, he just plays drums? I don't understand where that even comes from,
right.
that you would call a music track just a beat. When
right.
Janet Jackson said, give me a beat, you heard the drums.
Right.
You know, I don't understand when somebody says, I want you to check out my mixtape. I'm thinking I need to go to the store and buy a cassette player. It's a
right,
CD.
Right.
Hello?
Yes.
I mean, knock, knock, are you there? What is going on here? The vocabulary, the lack of knowledge of what's going on, it really bothers me. You
yes,
go down
sir.
To the end of the street and little Jimmy and little Johnny have some little equipment that they found online, and now they think, quote, unquote, they make beats. And they've now made a record.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll say, at midnight, my new single is dropping on SoundCloud.
Right.
Are you serious?
Right.
A single and dropping on SoundCloud?
On SoundCloud.
Who do you...
I mean,
I'm just like, are you really, really, really serious? They've mm-hmm. got the game all twisted. It has become so mm-hmm. easy because of technology. Okay, here's another mm-hmm. problem. You can go to YouTube and find mostly anybody's album, the audio files of it.
That's right. Yeah.
And you can listen to the album as if you had just purchased it as a download.
That's
YouTube
right.
was supposed to be videos. How do mm-hmm. they even allow just sound files to be there?
Mm-hmm.
Another problem I have is bootlegging. Everybody
mm-hmm.
wants something on the easy, on the low, on the come up.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, I wager to you that people never stopped liking music. They just didn't want to pay for it the traditional way.
Mm-hmm.
Because like someone like Future, who has a new album out that's struggling, probably surround 100,000 sales, and Sony Music has put a lot of money into him, and they can't really
mm-hmm.
hit pay dirt on him, and this is his second album. But I bet you if you were to go into the hood, you're going to find a lot of people that have the Future album, but
right.
it didn't pass through anybody's UPC barcode.
Right.
The
that's
same thing
exactly
with
right.
the current Rick Ross album or whomever, you know. They're just, the sales
mm-hmm.
are so down. And I look at Pharrell, who has had a number one song in 17 countries, and he's not even gold yet. You look
mm-hmm.
at Mariah's new album, which in its first week sales only did 58,000 copies, when she normally
mm-hmm.
does over gold in her first week. Are you kidding me?
Mm-hmm.
The
mm-hmm.
last Chris Brown album, the last Neo album, the last Miguel album, the last Trey Songz album,
mm-hmm.
Monica, Brandy, none of these records even dented near gold. Sales
mm-hmm.
are way down. And part of the reason the sales are down is because of bootlegging, YouTube, mixtapes, whatever that is, and sites like That Piff.
Right.
And if, I don't know, I don't see any way that it's going to change. There was a period of time that the industry had tried to put these certain devices on their CDs so that you couldn't burn a copy of them. That became a
mm-hmm.
futile effort because anybody that
mm-hmm.
had an ounce of goose sense, all they had to do is run stereo patch cords from source
mm-hmm.
and make a CD.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like, I don't know. It's kind of like people look at the music business now as a microwave oven. It's like I want it
mm-hmm.
quick, fast, and in a hurry. There's
mm-hmm.
no dues being paid. Everybody
no.
wants to step from being a nothing into being
that's right.
a something. They want to blow up. They want to be paid for shows. They want to be
mm-hmm.
on BET or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't have any track record, no credibility.
Mm-hmm.
All
mm-hmm.
of the people that have lasting legacies, they paid their dues. And one of the reasons
thank
that
you.
They can still do dates when since music is not selling that well is because they have that catalog of songs. Their brand is
mm-hmm.
out there. So people will
mm-hmm.
pay money to put their behinds in a seat to go see them in concert. Who's going to go
mm-hmm.
pay to see a new unknown act that nobody knows any of your material? The only thing they've ever heard about you is that you dropped your new single on SoundCloud and that your album is on Dat Piff.
That's right. That's right.
I'm going to go pay $25 to see you live, and you gave me your music free on Dat Piff. Yeah, right. Okay. Next.
You know, it's incredible. I love to hear, I wish we could just, you know, press rewind and then also just share with you how Golden and myself, we always talk about how, you know, you can't just, you know, go to sleep and then wake up tomorrow and say, okay, I'm going to be a doctor today. I'm going into the hospital. I'm going to be a doctor. You know, you really have to go to school. You have to get the knowledge and the experience and learn from people such as yourself and others and get out there and put the groundwork in. And we talk about this so much. So I can't thank you enough for going in on that and just letting
well,
me know.
Well, here's another
like,
one for
you.
I just
you know,
thought of it. The people don't understand the necessity of signing to a performing rights organization like BMI, ASCAP, or
right.
CSAC, or Sound Exchange, or what have you. They have songs sometimes that get spins on internet, or very seldomly, but sometimes on terrestrial radio, and they say, well, I never got a check. Well, you're not going to get a check because you didn't sign up to one of the performing rights societies.
Mm-hmm.
Or, we should say, and your record hasn't been encoded. Every record has a detection, and in order to get that detection, the record has to be encoded. BMI or ASCAP are not going to wiggle their nose like Samantha on Bewitched and magically know that they're supposed to pay you as a writer or a publisher. They don't know that you exist.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But these young'uns, they know it all. They know it all only to know nothing. And I tell them sometimes when they get too big for the britches, I'm like, you know it all, I'm going to let you do it. And I'm going to see how that works out for you. That's all I can tell you.
That's right. I know that's right. Again, it's just like I can't say enough how I feel like going nuts is more like it's another Wednesday
all right,
night.
So it's
so
just
ready.
What we talk about on the show all the time, you know. But
really
it's just like he's saying exactly what we say, but it's great to have him on here saying this because a perspective of somebody who is not only a student of the game, a legend in the game, will garner different results from certain people. It's very hard, just like you were saying with the microwave music, it's very hard sometimes when these kids listen to other kids because that's what they're doing, and that's what they're seeing. They're seeing people that look like them, that act like them, that talk like them, get a bunch of money the next day in their eyes. So they think that, okay, I can do that same thing. So piggyback off of what you're saying, I want to go back a little bit when you spoke about hip-hop and R&B. Now, I'm a big fan of all the R&B that you are a part of. Having my own production company, we listen to, and my father basically bred me on that type of music. Soul music was playing all throughout my house growing up in New York every day. When you see something like hip-hop, because I think hip-hop conditioned people not to buy their records, like you said, the mixtapes, the different outlets, when they tell you, hey, I'm going to drop an album for free and ask for you to pay for it next month, that's not going to work. But R&B, to me, I'm pretty shocked at how those sales are not standing up the way they should. I see a woman like Adele, and I say, you know what? She has a beautiful voice, but she can wear a dress down to her ankles, sit in a chair and sing, and still sell 10 million records. You know, our R&B sisters have to damn near be naked on stage and doing a whole hour-long show of dancing, cartwheeling, everything just to even try to reach gold. What do you think is happening on the R&B side when it comes to record sales and why R&B sisters can't seem to match the sales of somebody else of a different color that has the soulful voice, so to speak?
Well, one of the problems I see with R&B, once it lost favor in the late 90s, is that too many R&B artists tried to be hip-hop-ish and didn't stay true to form to their genre, if you understand what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
Once that occurred, it's like, well, it transfers into what you see today with Chris Brown and Rico Love and August Alsina. Those brothers kind of come across with a rap sort of swag, even though
right.
they're classified as R&B artists. So they draw that kind of element because they think that's what it takes to be hip. So what do you see in rap videos and rap imagery? You see the females looking pretty ratchet and pretty much like sex sirens. They look like brothel women, you know. So it's called living it out the way you think people want it. But see, to me, R&B should have always stayed and been more classy. Now, there were certainly some R&B songs like Marvin Gaye had Sexual Healing or Let's Get It On. There were R&B songs, and Barry White, who was the godfather of love, you know, I mean, he had tunes that, but they still didn't go over the top. You know, they didn't get banned. They didn't have to have a bleep, or they didn't have to have a parental advisory sticker. I mean, I'm really
Even Candy Liquor. I forgot the guy who sang Candy Liquor, but I remember my father used to play that all
Marvin
the time.
Marvin Cease.
Marvin Cease. There you go. There you go.
I'm a historian in music as well. Right off the top of the head, I was able to tell you that. Whether it's rap, hip-hop, R&B, rock, or whatever, I try to know a lot about every genre of music. It doesn't necessarily mean that I like it. But I think that's what happened is when you let the form become less pure. So what did you see in some of Nelly's videos when he was using the credit card, sliding it down the cheeks of the women? You saw the more ratchet behavior. So when you saw Ashanti, when you saw Monica, or when you saw Brandy, or Aaliyah, whomever was happening at that particular time, if you noticed, the dresses got shorter, there was more cleavage showing, and at some point in time, that kind of got played out. And also, there was a lot of devices being used on music.
Yes.
You weren't getting pure singers singing like an Aretha or a Gladys or a Patti or a Shaka.
Auto-tune.
And, you know, one of the greatest stories I know is Aretha did an interview not too long ago with somebody, and they asked her, did she ever use auto-tune her voice? And here's the most classic answer that I've ever heard in my life. She said, what is that?
I didn't even know what it was.
And then the person went, she said, oh, no, everything I do is all me. I don't really see you can really call yourself a serious R&B singer if you need to have the tune, need to have your voice auto-tuned. I don't really get that. You know, like using, it's not used in the correct fashion as to what it was invented for. Like, a lot of the youngins of today get auto-tune confused with a vocoder. And that's a totally different thing. It's totally different. And I blame T-Pain for that to a large degree, because auto-tune was supposed to be as a device to correct pitch imperfections. It was never meant to be used to be turned, dialed all the way up. Sound like a vocoder, like what happened. And Cher did it as well. With that tune of hers, that really, really, really set the table for auto-tune. Because back in the day, before the auto-tune software was made, when you had a singer that was a little bit off-pitch, sometimes it just got a little bit more reverb on it, or maybe they put a little bit more compression on it, or they started using an octave divider or a harmonizer sometimes, something that just slightly matriculated enough to make you not really notice that it was off pitch. But now, oh my God, you're talking about auto-tune overload. I mean,
yeah,
probably a guy like Lil Wayne, it's okay if he's going to try to be a singer to auto-tune him and use it as a sort of a campy sort of a thing, not to be taken seriously. But to have someone like Chris Brown, in my opinion, who can sing, to have a tune that he does auto-tuned all the way through, I don't understand that.
Right.
I don't really get that. And I think that's what happened to R&B. R&B became, it was no longer pure. It became an art form that got messed with. And once it got messed with, then it really had a problem. Because Europeans really, really love real R&B.
Right.
And Australians do as well. And Japanese do as well. And they really got confused because they were wondering what happened to black music. In addition to the fact that when you stop and think, and it has nothing to do with a prejudice or being bigot or anything like that, because music has always been a universal language. But as a black man, I am deeply disturbed that the best R&B album in the last year is by Justin Timberlake. And giving him his props, he had the best R&B album. But
you would
think the originators of the art form would take notice of that and realize, that we're not doing something right. We're too busy auto-tuned and techno-popping R&B where it doesn't sound like the pure form anymore. So who wins the Billboard Awards for Best R&B Music? You got Justin Timberlake and Robin Thicke dominating those categories. Who wins in the rap categories? You have Eminem and Macklemore and Ryan Lewis. Now, to Eminem's credit, I think he's the baddest MC that walks the face of the earth right now. It's not anything that I would necessarily go by, but I believe in giving credit where credit is due. That guy has rhyme skills out the wazoo. He's incredible.
Yes. Yes, but, no, he definitely is. And I give him credit all the time. I say, you know what? The guy's an incredible artist. But, you know, you just touched on so many important things. And, you know, we have these conversations, you know, on the show, outside of the show. One of the things that you touched on was losing its purity. And I remember having a conversation with a friend of mine about that same thing. And he talked about how if you line up the groups from the 70s and how they were dressed and singing about women. It was very passionate. Everybody was in suits. They made sure they had their different steps. And it was like, we respect the lady. We respect the woman. Then if you kind of go on to like when New Edition, this is what he was speaking about, and, you know, I can look back at it and say, I know exactly what you're talking about. When New Edition actually broke off, and then you had the individual guys that made up that group, but they were from a different place. You know, they were from an era coming up, late 80s, early 90s, Projects of Boston. They really start putting records out that actually said, this is who we are. It wasn't kind of like something that was put together for them, but they did. They still had writers. They still had people that were behind them. But those records were kind of more of a, it had a little raunchiness to it, you know, smack the booty up, flip the booty up, rub it down. But they still started as a guy group, you know, and it kind of broke off into, let us tell you how we feel about women or how we live our life. Do you think that's a generational thing? Because that's the question we had. Well, like, how did that change? How did it go from the boy bands or the guy groups in the suits, bowing, doing steps, respecting the women to I'll smack it up, I'll flip it, and I'll rub it down? Was that just people changing, and that's what just came out of their mouths now because that's how this generation acted?
I think it's cultural to a large degree. Mm-hmm. I think at some point in time it came from a lot of young black males in particular being raised by women, and a female cannot teach a male child how to be a man.
Mm.
And a lot of guys, when they grow up, especially in the inner city, and they see, and their mom and their dad were not married, and they may not even really know who their biological sperm donor is. They don't have respect for their mother because they may see their mother with a lot of men. Let's just be very honest about. They see their mother with a lot of men, and living in the close quarters that they do, they hear a lot of knocking boots in the house.
Wow.
You grow up thinking that's the way you're supposed to treat a female, because they may hear that male there saying stuff to their mom like, are you my female dog, using the word for that. And so then they start going out in the streets calling females the female dog word, where they don't have any respect. Because I guarantee you that behind every, and it doesn't even apply totally to black males, behind every male that respects women and treats them like the queens that they are, you're going to see they had a good relationship with their mother and they respected their mother. But when you see one that disrespects their mother, they're going to disrespect other females. And then some of the females are so busy trying to wear the pants, if you will. They want to be hard. They want to show that they can do it on their own because they've become conditioned. So if you want to be a man, I'm going to treat you like a man. Because if you notice a lot of the youngins today, they call their girls man. Have you ever heard that?
Yeah, I have heard that.
They're like, hey, what's up, man? Man, you tripping. Man, I'll call you later. And I'm like, what? Are you kidding me? How are you going to call a female man? What's really going on here? And then it also transcends into the sagging thing. It's like sagging. I equate sagging with cleavage. You're trying to show you're being sexy. Well, if you're showing your behind, I'm trying to figure out how you're trying to attract a female like that. I'm really confused.
You know, that they have a lot of, documentaries out about that regarding prison culture and talking about how that's actually how the male who is, homosexual is inviting another male who's not to his backside. So a lot of people are now, you know, trying to show you that, listen, this is where this comes from. So you need to pull your pants up. And I think, a cultural thing, like you said, is so important because, you know, we try to figure out where this stuff changed. And a lot of people want to know which routes should they take. But again, we could go back to hip hop with Public Enemy, Tribe Called Quest. All these guys were coming out of the inner cities of New York. Still, Tribe Called Quest, Q-Tip, they're from Southside, Queens, you know, which is the same areas, Farmers and Southside, same areas where 50 Cent and Ja Rule and all these guys are from. But when they came out, the music was about the native tongue. People were wearing black medallions with African symbols on it. It was a different time, sort of like the 70s when, you know, people were coming back from the war, a sense of black pride, the civil rights movement. So it was kind of like they had experience to say something to somebody that was uplifting. James Brown was huge in that era for, you know, I'm black and I'm proud. So it was like a chant. This is what we want to tell you. Same thing with native tongues. When I saw that with hip-hop, I thought of the same type of thing that, you know, people did with the black pride and the civil rights movement. But now it switches when things change as far as the neighborhood changing. What's in the neighborhood? There was always killing. There was always drugs. But now what are we talking about? And I think it kind of shifted, like you said, through certain artists that were basically heralded to the umph degree. I love Tupac Shakur, but you ask anybody post-Tupac Shakur who they would want to be like, and it's Tupac Shakur rather than, you know, some other artists that may have had a softer side.
Well, I think it was a bit of a rebellion as well. Excuse me, perhaps rebellion backfire to a degree. I think that the hip-hop community, if you will, if that's what we want to call it, because to me hip-hop is really a culture and a lifestyle, and rap is the music of hip-hop, and that's the way I look at it.
Most definitely.
Hip-hop used to be a fun thing, party thing. There were a few people that were giving some very heavy messages, like if you really go back to the what I consider to be one of the originators of hip-hop would be the late Gil Scott-Heron.
Of course.
And you'd have to go way back, and these youngins today don't even know what he said. Gil Scott-Heron, what is he talking about? and there was X-Clan. There were people like that that had messages that were saying things that were some
poor righteous teachers.
Yes, there were things that, that were sort of revolutionary.
Father Shaheen just passed away. Right, right.
And then I think N.W.A. is responsible to a large degree of changing the tide. And obviously it was a West Coast thing with them. There were a few kind of rough East Coast people too, but nothing. Their thing was more battles like the battles with Kool Moe Dee and LL Cool J. They really didn't pull out real guns and go after each other. It wasn't really about turf in terms of red and blue and colors. Once NWA came about, NWA was like, you know, blank the police, and they were like the real renegades of society. Oh, my God. And once it went there, it was absolutely no turning back. And then you had the Texas movement. You had the Ghetto Boys.
Yes.
Then you had the Northern California people, like the Two Shorts.
E-40, Spice One.
Exactly. And then you had the movement when it went south. And south seemed to be good old country boys, like Outkast and Goody Mob, to just name a couple. And now hip-hop, to me, is trying to find a new direction, because it has fallen out of favor in sales big time. The major labels don't invest in it anymore because they know, I mean, like Interscope got rid of their urban music department, and Sony Music cut theirs back 50%. The premise that's stated is that, well, black people are giving their music away for free, and record companies are in the business to make money, so what's the point of having departments to cater to that, you know, genre of music? So it's kind of like, it's become so devalued because it's become so easy. Do you remember when it used to be like a luxury to get on an airplane and fly somewhere?
Yes.
Now when you go get on an airplane, it's kind of like a Greyhound bus.
Yes.
That's kind of what has happened to music. It has become so easy for people to record what they call music. And through the processes of this technology, they can record it earlier in the day, and later in the night, they will call themselves having released a single on SoundCloud. That is not the way a single is released. You know,
or the mixtape, my favorite, the mixtape release party. You know, so many people have given me flack for that, but I have some of my friends have had some, and I'm just like, dude, you're celebrating the release of your free mixtape? Is that why you booked the club and spent money to have people to come and celebrate that?
You've
got to
understand
this thing.
Their desire. I just think there really needs to be two lanes. There needs to be the lane of the serious musical artists that really want to have a shot of making a career out of this and reach a wide range of folks. Then you have the people like what we're railing against in this conversation that just want to do what they do, and they just want to have their block know them. But the problem is, and the problem had been for the last 10 years, I'd say, for sure, maybe the last 12 years, the ballers had the budgets because of their pharmaceutical sales. And they were able to manipulate radio. They were able to manipulate street promotions, retail promotions. But see, that's dried up now because Big Brother monitors everything you do, their Western Union transactions, your cell phone, your rent-a-car, your postings on MySpace, Facebook, Twitter, Kick, Instagram, et cetera, et cetera. So they can't quite do what they used to do because Big Brother, when it comes for time for accounting, they want to know, where did this money come from to do these radio promotions? Where did this money come from to do these retail promotions? And most of the baller people are either in jail or they're deceased, or they've gone so far under the radar that you can't even excavate them. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
They've done their damage, and now everybody's spinning their wheels like, oh, my God, Massa, what we going to do now? You know, it's like it's like we're lost in this thing. So,
well, how do we – I want to ask you a question, Mr. Johnson. How do we – because this is what goes on in the neighborhood. This is the difference. This was the difference in the inner city, you know, where I grew up. I'm sure where a lot of people that were listening grow up. You know, you could go to school, get an education, and get a job. But you also know that there's a guy that's not doing any of that, that's having all of the luxuries that you want to have. And you see growing up, so you have the choice. You have the street life, and then you have the straight and narrow. Same with music. You see a guy like KRS-One, who was actually a part of a gang, actually ran with a rough set of people out of Bronx, New York, but never put that in his music. His music is critically acclaimed, but if you want to talk about money, a lot of people would tell you, you know, I don't think KRS has a lot. Versus somebody that's putting that out to the public in a way that's rebellious and violent. He may not even be as tough as KRS, but this is what he's putting out there, and they see him dripping in money. How do you fight that as young guys coming out of the inner city, which is mostly the artists that we want to say are want to be independent artists, want to be on the come up. These are the guys that are seeing this stuff. So how can we kind of like let the youth know or anybody trying to get in music that this is not what you want to talk about, but right in front of their face, the guys that are talking about that are the guys that's getting the checks, are the guys that are getting booked for shows.
Well, the ones that kind of used to, not like they used to, but if they were able to create a legacy, then they have, there's some supply and demand for them. Education is the way. We have to cut out the monkey see, monkey do scenario.
Right.
You know, a lot of the crime that happens in the black community, when the authorities end up catching the people and they find the vehicle, and guess what's playing in the dashboard in the CD player? That idiom,
right,
that some people call gangster rap or the ratchet sort of stuff. You know, if you keep on eating McDonald's every day, you already know what it's going to do to your insides, right?
Yes.
So if you have a steady diet of that kind of music, then that's going to have an impact on the kind of person that you are, the kind of things that you do. I'm not trying to, I don't want anybody to think that I'm saying there should be no rap, because I have rap clients. But what there should be is you should take some responsibility for what you're talking about, because you're having an impact on young ones, and many of these people have children. And their children are growing up hearing this kind of foul-mouthed music, and that's the kind of people their kids are going to end up being. How can you try to be an example for your kid when you're doing one, you say, okay, do what I say, but not what I do. What? Because normally kids have a tendency to look at their parents as their first role model. It's like the behavior of the mothers that I was speaking of earlier. That has an indelible impact on that child's life. So if your father's a rapper,
mm-hmm,
and you hear him calling women bees and calling fellow blacks the N-word, and talking about getting ready to go out and jack somebody at an ATM machine and go fight somebody or this, that, or the other, that's the kind of stuff that you think, hey, that's cool. That's what I'm supposed to do.
Yeah.
Just how entertaining,
yeah,
is that, really? I mean, you know, how really entertaining is advocating violence? I mean,
you know, it's kind of crazy. It's like people were brainwashed, you know, to think that, you know, and I would not say just rap, movies, these reality television shows, you know, all you have is this glorification.
The video games.
The video games, you know, all you have is this glorification of the violent nature, and then it's wrapped around a bow of red bottoms, nice purses, big gold chains, 8 gold chains, Maybachs. A lot of stuff that these kids aspire to have. One thing
would you
I
not agree
I
that
to,
it comes down to bad is good and good is bad.
But how do we differentiate, well, not differentiate it, but how do we get people to look at it? It's like BET and Century.
It's education,
right?
Though. You know, what makes the Chinese people so great? What makes the Japanese culture so great? And those people there get educated. We, as blacks, are lacking in education and skills. We glorify, not all of us, but some of us glorify the wrong things. The attention, some people will blame it on the media and think it's by design, but how often do you see positive news? I mean, every night in every city in America, you're going to see the 11 o'clock news lead off with stories of mayhem and gore. I mean, you're not going to see somebody out planting the flower garden. I mean, it's just, you know, people like drama. Look at the reality shows. The women on there dressed to the nines and standing up hitting each other over the head with stuff or snatching out weeds, the kind of behavior that is just like, oh, my God, what is going on here? And look at the way some of the women dress. I mean, they dress like ladies of the night. I mean, some of them, their dresses are so short, and those heels, those 7-inch heels, they look like a giraffe walking. I mean, but that's supposed to be great. That's supposed to be fabulous. Because everybody else has those high heels, so I've got to get those high heels. Everybody else has a low-cut dress on, so I've got to wear a low-cut dress. Everybody else has a dress up to their navel, so I've got to have my dress up to the navel. I don't know. I mean, like I said, it's called education. You know, there's the concept that it takes a village to raise a child. Back in the day, the neighborhood would become very involved in the rearing of a child. You know, I was never a bad kid, but there were kids in my neighborhood that were not necessarily so good. But if Mrs. Smith saw Johnny acting up, she'd call Mr. Davis and let him know. And back in those days, Mr. Davis could spank Johnny and tell his parents what he was doing, and he spanked him, and the kid would get a second spanking from his parents. And Mr. Davis would be thanked for correcting the child. Well, nowadays, you touch or say something to somebody else's child, you might as well go ahead and have a pre-burial plan.
Yeah, you're going to jail. You're going to jail if somebody's coming to your house and screaming and hitting.
Right. You're either going to casket sharp or going to jail. It's going to be one or the other. Things have changed, but they're not necessarily for the better. And I don't know. There's an old country expression that says you can't unring a bell. I don't know. I think that if the DJ community, the media that deals in urban music in particular, if all the DJs that did urban music would suddenly say, no more. We're not playing this ratchet stuff. We're not playing stuff where people talking about killing people, doing drug deals, and how great they are in the bed with all the alley terms. We're not going there anymore. Then we could effectuate some change.
Well, you know what's funny? This is another thing that we've been talking about for a while. Since 2006, there's only been 4 platinum rappers. You have Nicki Minaj, you have Kendrick Lamar, you have Drake, and you have Macklemore and Ryan Lewis, who most of those artists do not even cater to those topics that we're talking about.
Hold on a second here. Mm-hmm. You said Nicki Minaj. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Nicki Minaj's last record went nowhere. Did you notice that?
Yeah, and you know what I noticed? I noticed it was the Starship record that took her to the stars. And when she reverts back to the urban rap, that's when it goes nowhere. The 2 records that really, like, catapulted her, in my eyes, was the Starship and boom, 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 the bass record.
MCs are having a very, 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 very hard time. They're not the flavor at all. But you mentioned Nicki Minaj. We talked about her. Okay,
yes.
Platinum. Did you mention Eminem?
I was actually talking of new artists, but okay. No, I didn't mention it.
Well, you're talking about the platinum. Okay, so yeah. Nicki Minaj went platinum. Drake went platinum.
Mm-hmm.
Macklemore and Ryan Lewis went platinum. And who was the other platinum you said?
Kendrick Lamar.
Okay. Well, we talked about Nicki. Kendrick is the only African-American in there. Drake is biracial.
Yeah.
And he's right, even a foreigner. He's not even an American.
He's
and then we have Macklemore and Ryan Lewis. Well, what does that tell you? It also gives you an indicator of who buys music.
Most definitely.
So
Most definitely.
That's why Adele can sell 10 million records, and Kay Michelle can, or Janelle Monáe, who's incredibly talented. Last report I saw on her, she sold about 99,000, and that was it.
Wow.
But, you know, because she has a name for herself, she's been over in Europe touring and what have you. But the reality is, it's sometimes the sheer numbers. Caucasians outnumber us big time, and they are less into the mixtapes on that piff and all of that kind of thing. And then a lot of people don't understand that make music, the two demographics that buy the most music. If you, man, there's just so many things I could say. You are, that's why I say there need to be the two lanes. Some of the people that need to hear this or understand this, they could care less because they're not trying to be in music to be an artist.
Right.
There's a difference between an artist and people that make crap. That's what I call bad rap crap. Or called zingers, bad singers. Those people are just went to Johnny or Jimmy's place and they did their little thing and they thought, man, I got a record dropping on SoundCloud. Okay, so what you have happening here is you have a thing called the sheer numbers. The majority of recorded music is purchased by Caucasian females between the ages of 13 to 22. That's the number
Correct.
One recorded music block. Excuse me. The second biggest recorded music block is the lesbian and gay community. They are the second biggest recorded music block. So if you're going to sell recorded music, you have to have stuff that appeals to the two demographics that will actually go in their pocket and spend money via cash or via plastic.
Right.
And then there's theories that blacks suffer a lot from being, since the music has become very digital now, there's not as many physical CDs out. They're saying a lot of blacks don't have credits or debit cards, so they can't purchase from iTunes and Amazon and all of that.
Yeah, no, I've heard it big time, and especially when you just mentioned the LGBT community, you know, Nicki Minaj, her fan base is a lot of, you know, that community loves her. Macklemore, Ryan Lewis, it was almost like they came out to specifically cater to that demographic of people. And yeah, no, we spoke about this a little while ago, and we spoke about festivals compared to club appearances. You know, the people that go to these festivals and these artists do really well. The Tech Nines of the world, you know, guys that are basically independently handling their business really well, but catering to people that come to these festivals. They buy merch. They come to your concert in the clothing of your band. Like, they're going to come with the Strange Music shirt, some cargo shorts, and some shoes ready to get wet and sweaty, as opposed to the guys going to the club to see the club artists, which are, you know, a lot of our urban
I wish you
battles.
Would try to get spray an African-American person that comes to a concert and mess up their hair that they just had done at the beauty shop.
Oh,
are their nails no 7-inch heels? Oh, my God.
That's
you're
what we're
talking about.
It's like
drama.
They go there mostly to be seen by other people, and that's, you know, they got on the Gucci, they have on the, you know, the Louis Vuitton and things like that. They're not even, I don't think, considering, yeah, they might like the music that the artist is singing, but they're really there to see each other and to tell people, look what I got on. But these festivals, man, these kids are buying records, and people are looking out at these big Wu-Tang shows, and look at Coachella, Outkast 20. There was mostly white people people. Majority of that whole crowd was white people, but they kept saying how they weren't responding well to the Outkast music because most of them didn't even know the songs. They didn't even know who it was. They didn't know Outkast's Sorry, Miss Jackson, you know, but they know Coachella and what that is. So
oh,
they
absolutely.
Go.
But at the end of the day, Outkast got that check. They have no intentions of recording an album. There's issues there, but they're out on this big doing 40 dates tour, and they're getting paid. You know, it like I said, it's cultural. Like, you know, what we're talking about, it's like think about a black concert, and the first thing you hear the female saying, "I got to get me an outfit."
Mm-hmm.
Why do you need to get you an outfit to go to a concert? Because you're going to, as you just said, to be seen. No
yes.
one really should care about what you have on. You're not the entertainer. Why
you're not on stage.
Got to get me an outfit. I like that's why I like rock. I like wearing my baseball cap, a shirt and jeans, and call it a day. An outfit? Are you serious? With the prices of tickets nowadays for concerts, you'd pretty much be wiped out to have to get an outfit and then pay the ticket price, pay for parking, all of the things you have to do. That could be why the concert industry is suffering on the African-American side, because people have to go get an outfit. We've just got everything all, the dynamics are just, they're just all
Is there
wrong.
Any coming back from it, Mr. Johnson? Is there any
The only good thing I can tell you is that,
find the ship.
Like with the old school artists that are out there, like the OJs and Stevie Wonder and Chaka Khan and Aretha Franklin and Gladys Knight and Patti LaBelle and all these people, they still work. They still play. You know that people like that, some of those people I named, they make $150,000 a night. That's their performance fee. But do you know who the majority of the people are that are in their crowds? They're white people.
White people, yeah.
Because white people will pay money. Have you seen how white people will camp outside for a week to get a ticket to see the Rolling Stones in a baseball stadium?
Yes, I have. Yes,
There's
I have.
There's not a black act that I know that anybody would camp outside for a week to go see them in a stadium. We kick our legendary artists to the curb. What they got out now? No one cares if the Rolling Stones haven't had a hit record in a million years.
Nope.
They're going to pack every place they go. No one cares that Aerosmith hasn't had a hit record. No one cares that Meatloaf hasn't had a hit record. I'm just naming off names. But they will go see these people. But us? Oh, no, 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 no. It's not going to happen. Totally.
You know what's so funny about it, man? You and the reason why I'm asking you these type of questions is, of course, we have a younger audience. I'm so happy that, you know, it was an interview where you got to tell these people your history, but then got to tell them how you feel about what we're actually doing today. Because we often talk about Mick Jagger, Steven Tyler. These guys are, you know, almost a bag of bones jumping around on stage, still, you know, using that good music and selling out stadiums. But a guy that has a beautiful voice still like Charlie Wilson, you know, can he sell out a stadium?
The only way that Charlie Wilson could possibly sell out a stadium, and Uncle Charlie is awesome. As a matter of fact, my R&B singer Zay Fogg is going to be performing at the Midwest Music Festival in Louisville, Kentucky this weekend. It's a two-night affair. On the first night, it's Charlie Wilson, Chaka Khan, Ginuwine, and Life Jennings. On the second night, it's Toni Braxton, Babyface, Anthony Hamilton, Avant, Kiki Wyatt, Zay Foggs, and Molly
wow.
Music. And that's the serious show. But you see how many acts I named? It's a
have
festival.
To have a whole bunch, right?
You have to have a whole bunch of people. The Rolling Stones many times don't even have an opening act, and they perform for 2.5 hours. But with a black show, you've got to package a whole lot of people together to try to pull in enough numbers. It's,
wow.
It's cultural. We're different, you know. And I don't know if you can change culture, because it starts in your environment, your influences, and I'm not so sure that culture is something that we can change. But I'm not going to give up on trying to spread knowledge and education to
the young brothers and sisters. Please don't, because we got a handful of it tonight. It's so crazy, man. This interview's been so great. We only have 7 minutes left, and we know we have to play your artist's new song. But let me thank you.
You're very welcome, and anytime you guys want to have me back. Do you have any caller on the line, and maybe I could take two quick questions?
Yeah, let's Onyx, do we have anybody holding on for Ms. Johnson?
I have several callers holding on, but Lamont, who is our board technician, said they are just listening, so he did check in with them. They were just listening, and
okay, great.
I mean, Sid, I've been over here rolling. I mean, crying, laughing. I mean, you have no idea. The things you're saying, you said something about having to get an outfit, and you said you're not the entertainer. I promise you, I say that all the time to Golden and other people. I'm like, wait a minute. Why am I stressed? I'm not going to be on stage. And then I just go back to not caring about that, you know, just being presentable. So it's so funny. I just died laughing. I mean, a lot of the things that you were saying, but it's true. You know, at the same time, it's still no laughing matter, but it's a sad one, but we just can't thank you enough for coming on and just, you know, I learned something. I'm no going. Got an opportunity to learn something as well. And
we got to get some parts of this interview out there to the world.
We do.
A lot of people that need to hear. You know, even though we like these new artists today and we're not trying to down them in any way, shape, or form, but at the same time, maybe if they even hear a guy with your, you know, legendary status, all the classic records that you've been a part of, say the things you say about the recording process, about you know, how people treat women, you know, maybe that's something that will, it might not change the whole culture's mind, but there might be two or three cats out there listening. It's like, you know what, I'm gonna change up my lyrics because I hear what he's saying.
That's
well,
right.
I've had an impact on a lot of brothers and sisters not using the N-word. When I really break it down to them, they stop and think about it, and they said, you know, you're exactly right. I mean, the biggest way in which I try to really get them to understand that is we did not invent that word. It was used as a slur and an insult against us, and it was actually a mispronounced word from the oppressor from the river Niger over in Africa, and they pronounced it another way, which I don't say the N-word, so ever. So they mispronounced it. How are we going to take ownership of something that we didn't create? There's no other race or no other ethnic group that uses a slur to call each other as a term of endearment. So just how much respect are you going to get? When you say that in front of people of other races and ethnicities, they're looking at you like, you are really dumb. In order to get respect, you must give respect. And if you don't respect yourself, then nobody's going to respect you. I'm sorry.
No, you know what's so funny? There had that conversation with somebody that you just had. There was one other word that we thought that that it happened like that as well, and that was pygmy, that Jamaicans use to talk about their little kids, their little babies. They call them pygmies, which derived from pickaninny. And one of the Jamaican ladies told me, he's like, I always wonder why we use that word to describe our babies, because that wasn't meant to be a good word also, but they always call their little babies pygmies as well.
Well, let me tell you guys something. Anytime you want to have me come back, I'll come back, and the next time we can totally devote it to a Q&A, and we can take callers. And that's what it'll be built on. When you start asking me questions and start getting me to talk, we're in for a good rock and a good roll. I have to give a shout out to all of my clients. But some of them are listening in. I got to say what's up to Zay Fox, to Skip to 12, to KB to Monster, to Mo Child, to the Clay, to Gutta, to Shank. Got some new people I'm going to be working with soon. I got to say what's up to my producers and my boys, D Hits and Guy West. I got to say what's up to Silo, Chow Pruitt, and Sayin. And also, Joker Boy, what's up? And a big shout-out to the wonderful Brother Golden and to Onyx. I have had an absolute ball, and I would be honored to come back for Q&A anytime you guys want to have me.
Awesome.
Oh, my goodness. Thank you so much. And we are going to play the Clay different. That is going to be our last record that we're going to play by Metcalf.
And they are different. This is different. It was fun to do. They play guitars and they sing and rap. And we cut it with live musicians, and we had a ball in the video. It's banging. It's only been out 3 weeks, and it's got over 12,000 views already on YouTube, and we're very proud of all the acts at MECAP. And once again, thank you for having us on The Cut.
Nice.
Thank you so much. And then one more thing. Just let them know how they can reach you and get in contact with you on your social network.
Yes.
At Uncle Jams is Twitter, UNCLE. JAMZ as in zebra, Z at the end. And for email, you can get a hold of me at mecapmusic@gmail.com, MECAPMUSIC @gmail.com.
Thank you so much, Sid. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Johnson, it was a pleasure, sir. Thank you.
Thank you. Have a nice night.
Truly awesome, such a rewarding night tonight to have Mr. Sid, Uncle Van Johnson on the line with us. I mean, were you in for an epic broadcast or what?
Man, you know, the funny thing about that interview, it was epic for real. And I think a lot of people not going to want to hear it, but they need to hear it.
It captivated, it brought truth. And the examples, the metaphors, everything that was needed, I just love how, I just love it. I just feel like we've been listening to him our whole life. You know what I mean? Like, it's just like we are literally, everything he said, it's like, okay, we are thinking along the right track. We are supposed to be doing it
right.
It kind of confirms for you, like, okay, I thought I wasn't crazy. I thought we were supposed to do
right. We're doing shit the right way. Okay, cool.
Exactly. You start feeling like it's just you. You're alone. And so it's just wonderful to hear him make more sense of it and you know, reference to back in the day and how it used to be and how, you know, it's not a matter of opinion. These are facts. I mean, the sales and the numbers don't lie. And it is what it is. But we did go off of broadcasting, you guys, so we're on the number now. So to listen, 760-913-4119. But we will be having this broadcast. We'll be recorded and available for playback after we close tonight. So we're actually going to play Different, which is by another one of Uncle Sid's artists, Uncle Sid. Hey, he could be my uncle. I'm born in Ohio, so, hey, we could be not too far. But, yes, this is Different by The Clay. That's K-L-A-Y. So, you guys, again, all of the information to reach him, he gave it to you. We're going to have the episode posted, and it's been a wonderful night. Jermaine DePriest, Global 14, The Cut, every Wednesday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central, and 5 p.m. Pacific. We'll be back, and you guys can follow me. A shout-out to Lamont, because I saw that work you were doing over there. That was a lot. So, thank you.
Big dog.
Lamont is... Lamont is our board technician. He's been going extra heavy with our Facebook page. We do have a Facebook page. We invite you guys to like our Facebook page. Shout out to Signal. We'll just send a tweet over. Listening.
Signal 20.
Shout out to a lot of people that were listening tonight. Yep. That's right. He made a comment about Babyface. That's right. So, yes, that's Lamont. Oh, that's what I was saying. Definitely shout out to Lamont, our voice technician for holding us down, and the Facebook page, Global 14 The Cut. You guys can find all of that on our Twitter, our Facebook page, our YouTube, at Global 14 The Cut. You can follow me on my social networks at Onyx254. And you guys, if you haven't already checked it out, I have a blog that I wrote these articles last year, but they're just not being published via a website. So, and they still ring true. I wrote one on radio play. Do you really need radio play? How it can be beneficial for you. And also, do I need to move out of my small city to make it big? So check out these two articles. And you can also access my new website launched today, queenofsaline.com. I'm turning 29 Friday. I just have to plug all my little things in here.
There's a bunch of stuff going on, man.
That's a bunch. I had a busy week. I got to plug everything.
It's so lovely.
I got to work.
You got to put it out there. You know,
I have
guys,
to.
follow us, man. We got so much things going on.
Yes.
Of course, you can hit me up at the Golden Fleece, THA Golden Fleece on Twitter, Instagram, Golden Fleece on Global 14. You're looking for production, of course, you can hit the website, 4QENT.com, the number 4QENT.com. And also, I had a special chat with somebody that will be coming on the show soon. And this goes in line just what Uncle Sid was just saying, you know, but it's the other side of things. Yeah, right. You got me saying, Uncle Sid. Mr. Johnson just saying, was just talking about, but it's the other side of the spectrum. Chief Keef's mother has a documentary coming out and wants to come on our show to talk about it, and it's about her son and the struggle of Chicago youth and why they run so hard and wild out there where they do. So be tuned in for that. It's a crazy insight into the life of that young man and his mom, which isn't even 40. You see what I'm saying? So it goes back to just what he was saying, but it's the other side of the spectrum. So stay tuned. We got a lot coming up.
I know that's right. Yes, and then at Global, again at Global 14, the Cut at Onyx 254 at the Golden Fleece and at Baby _ Bartos. A special shout out and salute and much respect again to our guests that came on tonight. How about calling Uncle Sid?
Be gone.
Hey, he is family. Another Wednesday, another epic Wednesday. Sid, Uncle Ben Johnson. Check out the blog. Play this broadcast back if you miss anything. We're going to ride out to his artist, The Clay. The song is called Different. Global 14, The Cut.
Peace.
Write you a love song, but you won't listen, and you're not impressed by diamonds and gold and how they glisten. Baby, tell me directions to your heart, and I will whip it so fast. You're so fast. When I arrive, I plan on staying a while. Just give me pillows and some space on the couch. This is for real. We could be making some vows to each other. Picket fence, maybe some kids in the house. I'll meet your mother and hope that I don't come on too strong. But I've been missing. I'm hoping I don't say this all wrong because I'm with it. And I just want you to get this. I might be being ridiculous, but I think that this is different. Tell me this is different. Tell me this is different. How it will be between us, of how we will be together. A story might do it better. We'll have intimate moments. I'll read one of my poems. We'll kiss and you'll start showing your desire to get it on with. I mix emotions, erotic notions, perfume and scented lotions, then provoking hand motion between your thighs. You won't be able to hide, yet for persistent vibes and body temperature. And I'm just so into you before I can get into you, love. Yeah. Tell me this is different. 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 I can hear the rain up against my window pane, and it's driving me insane. Cause we're all the same.
Cause we're all the same.
Yeah, we're all the same.
Cause we're all the same.
It's you I wanna claim, cause I'm tired of the games, and yeah, I might be to blame, but these girls are all the same.
Cause we're all the same.
Yeah, these girls are all the same. So tell me this is different.